You're listening to 9 Plus, a research podcast from SETU Ireland. Welcome to 9 Plus, a research podcast from the South East Technological University of Ireland. My name is Rob O'Connor. In the series so far, we've spoken about bioplastics, men's health, ethics in the music industry, the relationship between nutrition and vision, a deafened Irish playwright, cannabinoid research, and more. We always like to throw in some episodes about the nuts and bolts of research, though, like our tech transfer episode from last year or our EDI episode from a few months back. Today, I'm chatting with Susie Cullinan and Jonathan Brazel from the Research Support Unit about Pure, a new computer system at SETU for managing research. Pure is an example of a current research information system, or CRIS for short. If you're writing funding proposals or managing any sort of a research budget, you're going to be using Pure. Hopefully, this podcast will give you a primer as to what it is, why you'll be using it, and the benefits that it will bring. We also get into some other topics, such as open access research, and a little bit about Susie and Jonathan's careers to date. So let's begin by having Jonathan and Susie introduce themselves.
So my name is Susie Cullinan, and I'm the Senior Projects Coordinator, and I'm based in the Office of Research, Innovation and Graduate Studies here at SETU.
Thanks, Rob. My name is Jonathan Brazel, and my role is based on research data analytics and IT system support within the research office.
Okay, so we're here today to talk about PURE, which is an acronym. What's it an acronym for?
It's not actually, it's actually the brand name.
Oh, so, is it? Okay.
Yeah, CRIS, I suppose, is more the acronym that's often interchanged with it. So CRIS, C-R-I-S, is a current research information system.
Okay. So we're here to talk about research information systems, which might immediately sound like a switch-off moment, but it's of relevance to anyone who is involved in research or is thinking about getting involved in research around this place. And we're going to explore it. We're going to see why it's important, the benefits that it brings to somebody, and how it can basically make their life a little bit easier. So we'll start with, what is a CRIS system? So Jonathan, do you want to take that? Because you're nodding.
Sure, no worries. Thanks, Rob. A CRIS system basically is a huge database of everything that you can imagine regarding research activity within an organization. So everything from inputs to outputs is captured. There are workflows to guide people through research funding applications for grant funding and things like that. And on the flip side of it, people who write publications arising from their funded research activity or awards that come out of that endeavors to, you know, have a successful grant application are all captured within PURE and therefore reportable on as well in terms of the organization's strategy of looking at performance within the research domain, and, you know, for researchers themselves to bulk up their profiles and to have a publicly available profile that they can showcase their own achievements.
Right. So that's the back of the box description. Give me the fine print as to why it is important.
Hugely important for us strategically to have everything under one roof. It's a one-stop shop solution for everything that we need research data-wise.
Okay, so would I be correct in saying, now I'm imagining this, so I could be wrong, so please put me correct if I am. Would I be right in saying the reason why PURE, which is a brand, a type of CRIS system, the reason it's important is because at the moment, all of that information is unstructured. It is just hiding away on desktops, in folders, in random spots all over the place. And there is no overall one picture on what is going on in this organization. Susie, you're nodding. Yeah. So is this like, yeah, you're nodding furiously, meaning yes, yeah, and it is the bane of my life.
Yeah. So prior to implementing PURE, we had lots of different systems that did not talk to each other. And we wanted a single source of research data to help answer certain questions at an organizational level. And in addition, our research active staff were constantly inundated with requests for their research information to feed into school reviews, institutional reviews, or research group and centre annual reports. But it was all requested in different formats. And what Pure does is it's a single source of research data to help answer all of these questions. So it really helps to reduce the time and effort from the researcher's perspective. And from our perspective, it's really enhanced our reporting capabilities because, as Jonathan said, it is a one-stop shop. So all of the data is there and easily reportable.
So why is reporting important? Why should we be concerned with that?
Well, it's one of our requirements from the HEA is to capture and report on our research metrics. But also what PURE does, it helps to increase the visibility of our researchers and to showcase the wonderful research that's ongoing at the university. And what we were acutely aware of is that we were really under-reporting all of our research outputs in particular. We didn't have a proper system to capture all of this information. And therefore, we're not really showcasing the full extent as to what SETU is involved in and the impact that our research has on the wider public. So therefore, having this really helps to showcase what it is that we're doing and how our research can impact the public.
Okay, so this is not what I'm going to describe something to you that isn't PURE or isn't a CRIS system, but it's something that I'm going through at the moment with respect to an international agreement. And there we're putting together these documents and it is time consuming and there's a lot of chasing people for little bits of information. And I'm just one cog in the wheel and it's very time consuming. Is the idea with... If you need to, I need 10 profiles and you have to go and chase 10 people. Mm-hmm. If they're set up in PURE, you just press a button and you have that lickety-split.
And if by magic it just appears, absolutely. Yeah. That is the end game.
Right, okay.
And we're still at a stage where we're collecting an awful lot of that data because we had a lot of data gaps. Because we had disparate systems across the organisation, some systems capturing information on staff, some on our research students, some on publications, some on projects, that it was all in different systems across the organisation. And now this brings all of the information into one single source. So as you said, it's easy to report on then.
And are there similar systems in play in other universities? Is this common?
Yeah, absolutely. The precursor, I suppose, would have been a research information system, which some organisations would have in maybe a slightly more primitive capacity, not as elegant as what we have at the moment in terms of PURE. But everybody would have strived for that kind of central database, that one-stop shop kind of effort. And it's right across the globe. It's right across Europe. It's even worked its way into a standardisation for the data contained in these systems to adhere to a certain format so that they can migrate between different systems. And it's definitely something that, you know, everybody globally just kind of, you know, aims to achieve in their own organization.
And so, Susie, would it be correct in saying that when an organization reaches a certain scale, because what you're describing with lots of disparate systems, when something is small or smaller, that's easier to manage because you know in your head that bit is over there and that bit is over there and that bit is over there. But then when those bits increase in number, it becomes difficult to where was that information? Who had that? This is a function of scale. So as SETU becomes a larger organisation, really it needs to a system like this. Is that I know I'm probably being reductive, but...
No, you're absolutely right, Rob. And when I started here 24 years ago, I think now, we had spreadsheets. We had a spreadsheet of information on projects and proposals, for example. We kind of knew who the main researchers were. So if there was a request that came in, we had the information in our heads. But you're right, we get to a certain scale. So what happened was we got to such a size where we required a person like Jonathan to come in and help to build our systems and our supports. And actually, in 2017, when I was doing the EARMA Certificate in Research Management, one of the other students on the course was a girl from UCD. And she had showcased her research information system that they had in their organisation. And when I saw that, I came back and I said to our VP of research at the time, we have got to get one of these systems because it makes life so much easier. Mm. So we started the the quest then, myself and Jonathan, to go out to try and procure a current research information system. And at the time, TU Dublin were also working on getting a system like this as well. So we worked very closely with the HEA Net and put a procurement framework in place. And then Pure, which is a product by Elsevier, was the provider of choice that we went with. But there is a number of other providers on the framework now that any organisation in Ireland, any research performing organisation, can now choose from. And we loved the look and feel of Pure. It just felt right. It felt like a good fit for us. But now there's seven research performing organisations in Ireland have chosen Pure as well, actually. And now we have set up a Pure user group, an Irish Pure user group, also known as IPUG.
You can never get away from the acronyms, can you? No, okay.
So we can learn from each other and we can all ensure that Pure will feed into our reporting requirements from the funder's perspective and from the HEA's perspective.
Right. Can we go work through an example? Because this all sounds... I mean, I can understand the benefits of it and I can see where you're coming from with it. But maybe let's talk through an example as to why this is important and how somebody would use it. So let's say I'm a novice researcher and I want to apply for a grant or I want to apply for something. What do I need to do?
Okay.
So let's say I'm coming to you, Susie, you're in the RSU, in the research support unit, and right, I want to apply if there's a call out for something from the HEA or from the EU or wherever it might be. What do I need to do?
Okay, with regard to Pure, there's two aspects to Pure. One is a public facing portal, which is profiling our researchers. So at an early stage, they may not have, you know, many research outputs, but we can set them up to access to the grant management system. So there's two sides. There's the portal, which is your profile, and then there's the award management module in Pure. So we can set them up with access to the award management module, and that has all of the funding opportunities in it. So as you mentioned there, you might be applying to Enterprise Ireland or Science Foundation Ireland. So that funding opportunity is already in Pure.
So let's say I don't even know what the funding is. Okay, because I know that there's, like me right now, I know that there's a number of bodies that give out awards. But let's say I'm starting out and I don't know that. I think everything goes to the HEA, for example. And then you go in and you say, oh, Enterprise Ireland, what, do they give out money? The EU, they give out money? I'm always actually surprised the amount of people who don't know the EU give out research money. It's one of their main functions. Anyway, so you're saying if I create a Pure profile, I can go in and I can see all these.
You can see all of the funding opportunities, but Rob, to be honest with you, there are hundreds of funding opportunities in Pure. So our advice to an early stage researcher would be to talk to the staff in the research support unit. We have a National Research Programme Officer, Luke Power, and we have a European Research Programme Officer, Jamie Power, who can help to guide researchers as to where is the best place to look for funding. And once they have identified the possible funding opportunity, then they hop onto Pure, they create an application in Pure, and then they can work through on their application and submit it to the funding agency. And when they're successful, not if, when they're successful, Pure helps to manage their research projects.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you can actually prepare your proposal in Pure.
Yeah,
that's a lot of P's.
That's a lot of
alliteration. Prepare your proposal in Pure. Is that correct?
Well, what it does is we have our internal workflow, so our approval process within Pure. So a person selects the funding opportunity in Pure, they upload their application and their budget in Pure, and then this is sent through the system then to the various approvers, so to the research support unit and to the project accountants in the finance office. And then they communicate with the research office and the finance office through Pure until it's eventually approved and signed off at an organisational level, and then it can be submitted to the funding agency.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right. So let's go back to the example of Joe or Josephine Soap starting things out. What do I need to do? How do I get going with this? You said come in and talk to you. Well, what do I do next?
Well, there is a dedicated email account where we can actually set up a person's profile in Pure, and then they have access to update their profile and to submit their funding application. It's pure.wd@setu.ie.
And would that be, so setting up a profile, Is it time consuming?
No, it's really, really simple, actually.
Okay, is it like setting up a social media profile?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's okay. Even easier.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah, because what we do is we keep things as tight as possible in terms of data integrity. So when you get in contact with us to let us know that you need a profile for your research activity, we request your details basically from Core HR. So whatever's on record for you already, we already have a transcript of that to bring into Pure for you and synchronize everything with those systems. So okay. There's very little actually for you to do other than really log in and start using the system.
Okay, great. Right, so you automatically get that. Right, mm-hmm. Let's say I have a couple of publications and I want to add those to my Pure profile. How do I do that?
Well, this is the really, really interesting part about Pure is that it's integrated not only with internal systems, it's also integrated with external systems. So we have it linked in with Scopus. So if a person adds their Scopus ID and their ORCID ID, okay. Whatever is in Scopus and ORCID currently is brought into the back end of their Pure profile. So they can just check it to make sure that it is them, that it's brought into Pure, and they can add it to their profile. And previously, a person had to add all of their publications and research outputs manually through the institutional repository. But now Pure automatically harvests this information, brings it into their profile, and they just have to accept it. And then it's brought through the internal library validation team.
OK, let's say I don't know what Scopus or ORCID is. Could you just describe what those are, Jonathan?
Yeah, sure. So Scopus, and I'll throw out a horrible word, it's a bibliographic index. So basically, we're going to wheel that one back and explain exactly what that means. It's a huge repository of publications. So Scopus looks into all the various journals and conferences from leading publishers out there, and it compiles them all into one searchable index, the same way Google searches the web. Exactly the same kind of thing.
Is Scopus an acronym?
No.
Okay. ORCID is though, isn't it?
ORCID is...
Is it an open researcher ID or something like that?
I just can't recall what it stands
something
for.
Something like yeah. that. Yeah. I can't remember.
I'm so used to just using the word at this stage. I've kind of lost the reference point on it. But yeah.
So what's ORCID then?
ORCID is kind of, it's an independent researcher ID. So it's we come across a lot of researchers in different organizations and they get certain identifiers, you know, that they can't bring with them because they're tied to their organization and their profile doesn't follow them around throughout their career. But with ORCID, they've got kind of this external property of themselves that they can register for. They can synchronize all their publications to it and just take that record of their research activity with them no matter where they go. So it's like having a living CV that's always going to be up to date for you and never kind of locked into one organization when you kind of move on in your career. The other interesting thing about ORCID as well is the number of integrations that it's getting on board with at the moment. And they've got this kind of concept of really making the data in people's profiles a lot more robust and trustworthy. So at the moment, we're seeing things like publishers getting the authority to write the people's profiles. So rather than you putting up a publication and claiming that you actually wrote this and presented it or it's in Journal X, the publisher writes it with a stamp of authority saying that this actually comes from publisher X who's written this record. And I verify that this person has written this article and it is published in this journal. And similarly, we've got the capacity now within Pure to write the people's profiles for their affiliations. So we stamp it with SETU saying, yes, we can confirm that this person was employed by SETU.
Okay, so this is, I hate to be, I know I mentioned social media. Is this a kind of a verified user status? Kind of?
Yeah,
you know, I'm not trying to make a dig about Twitter and blue ticks or anything like that, right? But is it a way of saying, yes, we verify that Jonathan Brazel is with SETU and Josephine Soap, it doesn't matter who it is.
That's exactly it.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there's a compendium of it. It's not linked to one organization that you're with. So just say I was with SETU today and 3 years time I'm with TCD.
Yes.
TCD will stamp it, but it's always a verified stamp to know that, you know, you can trust that person had that career path.
Okay. Who manages ORCID? Do you know?
It's an independent body, ORCID okay. themselves. They've got a load of people in different parts of the world. They're based in America and Europe and different outlets. We've got a national contact point in Ireland for ORCID who manages a consortium. So all of our technical needs or kind of curiosities are addressed. And we have a national conference once a year as well that we participate in and get to air, you know, our integration experiences and shortcomings or ideas for where ORCID can go in the future.
Excellent. I never knew that. So that's why, thanks. I often wondered where it came from. Right. So the likes of ORCID and Scopus, they link into Pure. And are there systems that Pure can link into as well? Other systems? So, Susie, you're nodding.
Yeah, so we can also pull in information on publications from the likes of Web of Science or PubMed. So it can link into a lot of different systems, but it depends on what systems then that we sign up to as an organisation as well. And then internally, all of our, as Jonathan mentioned earlier, all of our staff data comes from the core HR system. All of our research postgraduate students also get a profile in Pure if they so wish to have one. And so it links in with our banner system. It also links in with our ePrints repository. So we've brought all of our publications from ePrints into Pure also. So it links in with a huge number of systems. And they also have Newsflow, a link into media, external media items. So if somebody has been mentioned in the media, that can also be brought into their portal as well. So you can see your question earlier. All of this information is automatically harvested and brought into their portal before they ever, you know, commence work on their profile. So simply adding a photograph and a little bio, they have a nice, rich profile.
Okay. So I'm very intrigued that it's linking with non-traditional research output. So if I had a piece in the Irish Times about some computer thing, right, or whatever, that can link in as into my Pure profile.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
But what's
right.
really important is the researcher themselves gets to check that and make sure they're happy that that's on their SETU profile.
Okay.
And then, and if they don't want it, because sometimes there's things in the media that's not relevant to your research, for example. Yeah. So you can just choose what you want on your profile that is relevant to your research.
Okay, so if it's me up in court because I didn't do my TV license,
exactly.
I can say, no, I keep that. I just take that one on the chin. Is that right?
We'll keep that one off the portal. Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, right. So I can see the benefit of this system. I can see where it's coming from. But let's try and take a step back through time and to see where we're coming from and maybe what's informing your opinion on this. So, I mean, I know both of you have been around this place for a long time, like myself. What I'd like to know where you're coming from and how you have gotten to the roles that you're in today. So maybe, Susie, we'll start with yourself. So, like, how do you end up here? I mean, if I said to you, you know, Susie doing the Leaving Cert or whatever, you'd be the research manager in SETU. You go, what? There's a load of acronyms I don't understand. You know what I mean? What does that? How do you end up here?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Like, and as project managers, I don't think anyone ever sets out to be a project manager in life, let alone, you know, any other walks of life. But when I started in SETU in 99, actually, I started in the development office, and I had no idea about what research was because I came from the HSC. Actually, I was working in Waterford University Hospital. I think it was Arkeen Hospital at the time.
Yeah.
And I started working in the development office with Dr. Vini Martin at the time. And I was looking after, I'd say, a handful of research projects. And one of them, funnily enough, was named Susie. It was a European project, yeah. And I just thought this was the strangest thing ever. There was a file over on the cabinet with my name on it. But I was just intrigued by research and researchers and the dedication that researchers have to doing research, especially considering we were an Institute of Technology at the time. And researchers, academic staff didn't get paid to do research. They did this on top of their normal day job. So I think I was brought along by the enthusiasm and the passion that the researchers had for research. And then a number of years later, research had grown substantially in WIT at the time, that we had a dedicated research office. So I was always looking after the research projects from day one. And 3 years ago, I had brought a number of key research enabling projects to a certain level that I couldn't continue them if I didn't give them dedicated support. So I was managing the research support unit at the time, looking after all funded research activity. But I wanted to develop our CRIS. I wanted to develop a CRM, a customer relationship management system, also for the Institute. And I had developed an internal funding program, Research Connections. So I needed to be able to manage those. So we organised for me to be released then to manage these particular projects. So yeah, that's how I got to managing the implementation of Pure.
And Jonathan, yourself?
Yeah, I suppose I've got to go back through a bit of a time warp and give a kind of a grounding as to why I ended up here at all. It really has to go back to my undergrad and then my final year of my degree. I was always kind of research interested.
So you did computing, isn't
it? I did computing here in WIT, as it was at the time. And in my final year, I was looking around for a potential project. And I got wind of these guys in the TSSG, as it was known then. It was now the Walton Institute. And they were doing something really, really cool with kind of a telecoms rating system, and I kind of went to them. We worked out a project idea and kind of got involved with the guys, and I was just so intrigued about what they were doing that I was like, you know, commercial world is not for me. I want to get into research when I finish my undergrad. So luckily enough, opportunity came up for a software development role with TSSG after I graduated, and you know, I was lucky enough to be successful in my application for it, and I've been around ever since 2000 when I joined the organization. I took a little bit of time to do my master's part-time, again keeping in contact with that research side of things, but it's been research throughout. So I spent about 17 years in sort of software architecture, software development, before a position came up with the research office to look at their support systems, their data, their analytics and things like that. And numbers has been a huge thing with me all down the years as well. So it was kind of like, yeah, you know, I kind of fancy a bit of a pivot in my career as well. It's not something that I ever saw happening, but this was just kind of a perfect time for me to be able to kind of do something different while still taking the skills that I had previously into the new role. And so that's where I kind of linked up with Susie and the team, and, you know, been with them, what, 6-7 years now at this stage. And we've kind of gone through a number of systems developments, a number of internal improvements, a lot of digitization efforts, a lot of data cleaning, as you'd imagine as well, especially with the advent of Pure. It's been a real spring clean is an understatement in terms of what we've done for the data landscape in the organization. So that's kind of where I'm.
And you also did a bit of part-time lecturing in mathematics, isn't that correct?
That's right, yeah. I spent about 17 years part-time, mostly adult education with mathematics and statistics. Yeah.
But I just think that's important because that, like, we're seeing where you're both coming from with respect to this, in that it's not that you've just appeared fully formed with this computer system in your bag, you know. It's informed by many years of experience. Mm. And like, I mean, Jonathan, I remember we worked together in TSSG 100 years ago, and the pain of trying to manage proposals and trying to manage things. And we used to have like little pieces of paper or virtual pieces of paper, Word documents with bits of information
on them. We couldn't afford post-its. No.
But, so I can see where this is, where this comes into things and where this makes sense. And like, talk about spreadsheets. Jeez, Susie, life was lived by spreadsheets, and for me it still is, but that's another day's
actually
work.
When I started, it was on a Word document, which is even much more fun trying to actually get some statistics out of it. So I moved us from Word documents to spreadsheets, and it took Jonathan to move us to a database.
I mean, we talked about, right, so we see where you're coming from. I understand what's informing your opinions. You've told us what's good about Pure, you've told us what works with CRIS systems. What do you dislike? What isn't there yet? What feature would you like to be there that maybe isn't there yet? Either of you now go with that.
It's a really good question. And I think with the way it's, I'm not labeling Pure, it's not a failing of Pure per se, but the research landscape has such an incredible appetite for change. It is its nature that things, requirements, whether they be reporting or whether or not they be researcher obligations in terms of things that they have to kick back to funders, in terms of publicity of the awards that they've gotten and putting their logos and attachment to any publicity, you know, digital media that goes out there. It's very hard for any vendor to keep up with that kind of demand. So there's a lot of things that we're seeing emerging at the moment that Pure isn't there just yet, but it's in the pipelines and they're just about to break on it. So we're playing a little bit of catch up at the moment in terms of some of the features that we'd like to have, but there's also a huge number of features that Pure has that we haven't exploited yet and will be able to exploit in the future for our benefit, because it's a real treasure trove of, you know, kind of concepts that we previously didn't have the ability to do them within the organization, but now we do, and kind of finding an outlet for them is something that we have to do.
And Susie, yourself, is there any feature that you would like to see implemented in there? Or one of those unused features that maybe think that's the next bit I'd like to get into?
I think there is a lot. There is a lot in a current research information system, and it takes time to get people to use it. There is a number of as Jonathan said, kind of further developments that are required. So, for example, the CV module in Pure is very limited, and we don't understand why.
So is that CV like curriculum vitae? I was thinking computer vision for a minute, sorry.
So we signed up to a number of different modules when we signed up to Pure. So Pure can be as big or as small as you want it. So we have the award management module. We have that lovely profiling system. And we also have a CV module where people, once they have their information in Pure, can download a CV, for example, which is a wonderful idea. But when we go to do it, there is limited fields that you can download into your CV. So you know yourself, some of the funding agencies want, you know, a 10-page CV on basically everything that you've ever done. And especially now with DORA and the requirement for narrative CVs.
Sorry, what's DORA?
DORA is the Declaration...
Open research. It's stemming away from traditional kind of publication outputs.
Okay.
So it would appeal to an awful lot of people, say, outside of the STEM area, you know, that they wouldn't have traditional journal publications or things like that. But the research work itself is still just as, you know, as solid. DORA is kind of moving away from that. And because it moves away from the standard things, it moves away from citation counts and H indexes and all of these other metrics that are used to analyze and, you know, say where researchers are, and looks at these other forms.
Okay.
So the CV format is more the traditional format. You can download your publications, you can download your grants, and, you know, more kind of the quantitative metrics as opposed to those other things.
Okay, right. We didn't plan on talking about this, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because we've kind of touched on it, and I think it's a topic that has kind of bugged me for a while, and I'd like to know what your thoughts are on it. Open access research and open access publications. So people, researchers often have to pay extra money to make their research work open access.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time that research work has been paid for through public money via one of the funding models, whether it's the EU or Enterprise Ireland or the HEA or wherever it is. I'm sensing that there is a shift towards an open access model.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on it?
Well, there's definitely a shift, you know, on a European level and on a national level. So every single Horizon Europe funded project has to, you know, have their publications in an open access repository. And this is why Pure is critically important to us, because it allows us to put up, you know, the publications in different formats on Pure. And we can abide by the different open access rules and regulations that are being imposed on us, but also it's a good thing by the funding agencies. I think it's a great thing. And I think that during COVID, that really, really changed, you know, that everything was being available open in open access way really, really quickly. And we're currently finalising our own open research and open access policy for SETU at the moment. So, you know, this is the way forward.
Jonathan, you're...
It's a thorny one, as you kind of you touched on there, Robin, terms of saying, like, you know, it's open access and all of a sudden we've got to pay this extra money to make it open access. Well, why does that make sense? Like, you know, but I think, you know, open access probably had its origins in the kind of, you know, the little rebellious kind of streaks that are in all, you know, researchers, engineers and so forth, that, you know, kind of let's just push it out there. And the kind of the idea of an institutional repository, for example, grew. A lot of software supporting that we have our own here, that, you know, our institution librarian David Kane takes care of and has done for well over a decade. And the concept of this kind of Fediverse, almost, you know, to use that kind of term that's bandied about now with Mastodon and everything, is kind of, you know, everybody had their own institutional repository and just everybody had it open access. But the reality is, it's just too difficult to find that. So you still need these centralized, large scale repositories. And sadly, there's costs involved with managing those and publishing them, you know, the hosting costs for the big outfits and so forth. So we get these APCs, these, you know, article publishing charges that people have to, you know, offer up in order to kind of compensate the storage and the long-term preservation of what it is that they want free to the world, which is kind of a slightly ironic twist, but I suppose it's a harsh reality of the way things are as well.
Is there a national or a European plan for an open access platform? Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. I don't know. I'm asking you because I don't know. Like, in my opinion, if the EU, if the Commission had an open access platform and all the you funded research was published on this, that would be a huge repository, you know.
It'd be enormous. I suppose there are some moves in terms of, when you come to open access, there's the very traditional way of thinking about it in terms of publications, articles, you know, presentations, maybe things like that. But there's also the open access concept in terms of research data and data sets and the preservation of those too, that the data sets themselves now are being made open access as well.
Yes.
Not just the summation that comes out of the conference paper or whatever it may have been. There are platforms out there, I think, I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong, but it's something like Zenodo or something like that. I can't remember the exact word. But
That's a European one.
It's a European wide one. Okay. I don't think it's run by the commission, but it is a European wide kind of repository for data sets and stuff like that. But I think there's almost like a kind of distinct line at the moment between those who are using places to house their data sets versus those places that are used to house publications. And I'm not too sure they've married together just yet.
Yeah. Okay, I see what you're getting at. Yeah.
And actually, I was just up in the HEANet last week that they're looking at that particular issue at the moment. It's the space in order to actually save those data sets that are involved, you know, are the outputs from research, that it's really difficult to find somewhere that has, you know, access to massive terabytes of space that can house these. So they're looking at putting a national framework in place for the research data management and also for the storage of this data. So it would be wonderful if we had somewhere centrally to actually store all of that data.
It's a huge issue. Like, I'm going to pick an anecdote from my past life here as a software developer as well. One of the projects that I worked on was analyzing basically the traffic over a network for a huge call center, financial services domain, and the amount of just analysis data traffic, not looking at the files transferred or anything like that. It was all call center stuff. We got like 18 gigabytes of data in the space of 4 days. And, you know, that was a data set that could be analyzed. And if, you know, you multiply that by the number of researchers in an organization, if they're all kind of getting that stuff together, it's going to, you know, combinatorial explosion, I think, is, you know, the case of, you know, just terabytes, gigabytes, you know, of absolute kind of unhousable quantities almost, you know.
So this is when we talk about big data. You're not talking about like, oh, I have 100 survey responses in a spreadsheet. And I'm not saying that's not valid. It is valid, you know, but you could be dealing with large volumes of this. And of course, a lot of that information could be of benefit and use for comparing. Maybe you've done an experiment in something, somebody else did an experiment 5 years ago. Can I compare the data rather than just the paper? And I suppose the other thing when we're talking about open access is, again, I'm always mindful of somebody might not know what we're talking about, that the present model is, if I publish a paper in Journal X, whatever that journal is, I'm not going to pick a journal because I don't want to insult anyone and also nobody will have me, but if I publish a paper in Journal X, if you want to read that paper, you have to pay for Journal X. And often those journals are not like, it's not like buying a magazine that it costs, you know, a fiver. They're very, very expensive.
Yeah.
Very expensive.
Some of them can be hugely expensive. There's a lot of kind of, I suppose, hybrid models out there too with some of the publishers. But certainly the more prestigious ones, you know, you're talking large subscription charges every year. Academic organizations usually get the one that covers the entire organization. So kind of postgrad students, undergraduate students, staff can benefit from that kind of access. But for an individual trying to access an article, you could be talking about anything, you know, $45 upwards just to get your hands on one article from a source.
But people won't even pay a couple of quid to read an article behind a paywall in the newspaper. I know what you mean. Right, I have one last question for you. That's an interesting conversation, actually. It might be one that we might come back to, the open access model, because it's fascinating. I think there is a reckoning coming with that. Mm. But anyway, another day's work. One last question for you. Somebody was listening to this and they are not research active, are thinking about becoming research active. Maybe they're a final year student thinking about maybe exploring a postgrad route. Have you any advice for them, Susie?
Okay.
And this is as broad as anything.
Yeah. So if I was an undergraduate student thinking of doing a master's, as you know, it can be quite expensive to do a master's in Ireland. So I would be advising them to, first of all, find an area that they're passionate about. Find something that they're really interested in, because doing a master's, you know, is 2 years of their lives on a very niche area, or a PhD, it's 4 years of their life on a, you know, a very specific area. So find something that you're really interested in. Talk to your current lecturers, you know, the staff that are actually teaching you these areas in your class, and then come talk to the research office, because we will help you identify funding for your research. So, for example, the Irish Research Council have a Government of Ireland postgraduate scholarship programme where they will fund you to do your research. They'll pay your fees for you, and they'll give you a nice stipend during the year also. And also internally in SETU, we have a scholarship programme where we fund academic staff to take on a PhD student over a 4-year period. So there's lots of opportunities to get funding there. But the most important thing, in my opinion, is find an area that you're really passionate about, because, you know, you don't want to be doing something that you hate for the next 2 to 4 years.
Mm, that's good advice. Jonathan?
Yeah, it's sterling advice from Susie. I'm going to be a lot more generic in my answer, and I'm going to say that, you know, having gone through that kind of route from undergrad to research career myself and ending up where I am, I'd say that, you know, if you're the kind of person that thinks you've got a lot of questions and maybe you have some answers as opposed to knowing you have the answer, then a career in research is probably, you know, knocking on your doorstep. And, you know, it's kind of, it gives you the opportunity to come in, acquire funding for yourself, to chase the ideas that you have, you know, to find out whether or not there actually is anything, you know, kind of tangible from your thoughts or your, you know, your dreams maybe, you know. And then, you know, you've got the supports around you in an organization like this, whereby if you do come stumble across something big, you've got commercialization supports, you've got the people with the expertise, the legal knowledge, the you know, the kind of the knowledge transfer aspect of it in terms of licensing, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and spin out companies, if that's something that interests you as well. But definitely, if you've got questions more than answers, then I'd advise people to get into research.
Excellent. If somebody wanted to find out more about you, the Research Support Unit, Pure, what's the best place where you would send them? Is there anywhere they should go? Virtually.
Well, yeah. Well, the Research Support Unit is based on the top floor of the Walton IT building. So, and we open and we operate an open door policy there. You know, if you're interested in research, sometimes it just takes to sit down with somebody like that, with the programme officers, who are very knowledgeable about the whole research environment. So have a chat, because sometimes it really helps to put people's mind into focus as to what they want to achieve. Sometimes we get people coming with so many different ideas that we're saying, okay, let's take it one step at a time. Yeah. Let's identify one area that you want to research in. And we actually have a subscription of Research Professional, which is a funding opportunity database. So people can put in very niche areas of research interests into this database and find, you know, 10, 15 possible funding opportunities there as well. So that's another resource that we have. And then once they have that clear in their head, then what they want to go after, well, then we'll set them up with a Pure profile and help them through the system.
Jonathan, anywhere?
Yeah, I suppose if it's just to continue on where Susie finished off with the Pure side of it, if it is questions about Pure, if it's genuine curiosity, or if it's problems that you have, if you're already set up in the environment, drop us an email, I suppose, to that, you know, kind of generic email address, pure.wd@setu.ie, or individually mail myself or Susie. More than happy to jump on a Teams call at any stage and have a chat with somebody. As I think I've often said to people in the past, that 5 minutes talking about Pure can often solve a huge number of curiosities.
Yeah, and 5 minutes talking is a lot better than going back and forth via email.
Absolutely.
Many times. To Jonathan Brazel and Susie Cullinan, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Thanks for talking about Pure and expanding some of your thoughts about open access research. We're definitely going to get you back in the podcast again. We might have a bit of a ding-dong sometime. Maybe, Jonathan, like, we used to have lots of good arguments in the canteen in TSG 100,000 years ago. So we might try and capture one of those.
Yeah.
I said, all the details are there. If you do a search on the SETU website, you will find information about the Research Support Unit and all of the systems and supports that are available. Folks, thank you very, very much.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 9 Plus. There's one more to come before closing the book on this academic year. Stay up to date by following us on Twitter at 9 Plus Podcast. That's digit 9 PLUS Podcast. Thanks.